Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Optimize My Life, the ultimate radio show where we unlock the secrets to living our best lives. Now, before we dive into this exciting journey of self-improvement and empowerment, I want to take a moment to thank our incredible sponsor, The Hope Collection, for making this show possible. Their unwavering commitment to spreading hope and positivity in our lives is truly remarkable. We believe in the power of interaction, so we want you to be a part of this incredible journey. Call in, write to us, or connect on social media. We'd love to hear your questions, experiences, and challenges. Together, we'll create a thriving community of like-minded individuals, supporting each other to thrive and shine.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. It is Monday, it is Hometown Heroes. And today, I would love to talk about Autism Awareness Month. And off and on throughout the different shows, throughout the different weeks of the month, we're going to talk about different avenues of autism and special needs and neurodiversity. A lot of times when you hear the word autism, called autism spectrum disorder, I have been deliberately leaving disorder out of the category, out of the name. Because disorder gives you the negative inclination. Disorder means something's wrong. And with autism, first of all, the easiest way to explain what autism is, their brains are wired a little bit differently. So they may struggle in some aspects, but what they're lacking in one aspect, they're stronger in another. And I truly believe that everybody is born for a reason. Everybody's born the way they are for a reason. And too many times, we have this idea about our kids. And, you know, we always say we want them to be healthy, happy, and normal. Well, what happens when they're not born normal? And as you listen to these shows, you know, I have two kids that are born autistic. I look at them as gifted. I look at them as unique. I do not look at them like they're broken, and I do not look at them like they need to be changed. I fight and advocate for acceptance when it comes to these kids, taking their gifts and using them to their benefit. You know, one thing I really want to talk about today is our school systems and society in general. This is something that I've dealt with a lot of in my own world, and having our schools designed to, with these specialists, that they believe they're specialists in autism because they've trained in autism. And the problem is that there's no two cases of autism that's the same. There's no two kids that are alike. And they get into their heads, and a lot of parents do too, until they really start to come to grips with reality and what they are, but is that they want them to be normal, be like every other kid out there. And the one thing that baffles me, and Georgette's on too, who's you know, a mother of a gifted child as well, is that a lot of our therapies when it comes to autism puts all these kids with these gifts, all different challenges into the same room together. And you're taking all these kids that are different, puts them together and expecting to teach them how to be fit. How is that possible, personally?
Chime in right there. That has always been an issue. First of all, hey, everybody. It's your neighborhood juice dealing dope healer, Georgette. Also, an awesome mom to an awesome now 11-year-old son with amazing superpowers. And school has been interesting, to say the least, when it comes to placing them in categories and schools based upon superpower. I've always asked that, why didn't they group children together that were like, you know, alike? Because that's what they do with children who don't have gifts and talents. They will put them based upon test scores in different classes. So why can't that be a thing, is what I always come to that. And furthermore, when you put collectively all these energies and gifted children together and you're trying to get them on one accord, what is the agenda of the accord? Is it to be normal, quote-unquote, like the other children, or is it to simply take in your gifts and allow your gifts to work for you? Let's lead with your gifts. That's always been a thing. So for anybody with a resource out on a gift based school, I need that information. But that was my two cents in coming into that conversation, Mary. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing great. You know,
wonderful.
That's the thing that I don't get. You know, the first school we had my son in, absolutely shocked. I'm pulling my daughter out. And they literally wanted him to be normal. And he has learned at a young age, you know, kids are not listened to at all, gifted or non-gifted. You know, as a mom, as a dad, as a, you know, as an adult, when a child is upset, it is our genetic makeup to try to fix the problem. And we need to know what the problem is so we can fix it. So we bug our kids until they tell us what's wrong. Well, with gifted children, they're like little adults, the way their brains work. And so when we're mad as an adult, a lot of times we need to be left alone for a minute to calm ourselves down and figure out what's wrong. Because we have so many things going on at once.
Yeah.
Yes. It's the same thing with these kids. So, like, my son has come up with a metaphor world. And so he compares his feelings and emotions to animals. And he will use that to insult you at the same time, by the way. And so when he gets frustrated, he gets mad, and he wants you to leave him alone, he will call himself a baby anaconda snake, which is the most aggressive animal on the planet. They will bite for no reason. You walk by them, they will bite you just for the fact they can. And so he will tell you, you leave me the hell alone, or I'll bite, or I'll smash, or I'll pinch, I'll do something. Just leave me alone. When he's getting frustrated and he's getting to that point of to become a snake, he'll say shark. And it reminds me of back of the Jaws movie, because he will actually go da-da-da-da-da, shark, da-da-da-da. So you know to back away and leave him alone, because he's getting frustrated and he needs that space.
Now watch this. Most adults can't even process their emotions and sit back and say, hey, I am feeling this because you said this, this makes me feel, but then you don't have to react on it. So what he has done is created his image of how he is feeling on the inside, express it to you for you to back away so that he can process as to why he feels that. He's genius. Adults can't even do that.
Right?
Honey, I just learned about 3 weeks ago how to do that.
I'm still learning because I'm one of those. I'm a cutter. So I get frustrated. I get mad. Y'all don't leave me alone. I run my mouth. And I'll put you in your place.
Well, you know, being put into place is a two-way street because I think I speak for mommies across the world. When you have a child who is blunt and is unapologetically them, on top of the emotionless of autism sometimes that comes about, and the no filter, Gage has put me in my place a few times, and because I'm an adult and he's a child, most people would say that he's being disrespectful. And I even told him, hey, that's disrespectful because I'm your mom. But if he was an adult and he gave me this information, then I would have had to process it and receive it as an adult. And then I can, one, change my behavior, two, take a scope of things, and then I can not change my behavior and have a consequence behind it. So either I have all these different perspectives because I respect the word of an adult to me other than a child. But then when I broke it down, the science of it, this person is me, mirroring me, talking back to me, telling me the real shit. Listen to yourself. This is my higher self because he came from me and he has me in him. And so when I look at it from that point of view, and I can really say, dang, he gave me some valuable information. I have to process this because it's coming from my child. Yes, it hurts. Yes, it's the truth. And do you have an outlet to place it in to be able to respond where he can understand, but also respond to yourself so for your inner standing? Children mirror the truth. Whatever is going on in your home, in your life, your children, they show it. Your home is discombobulated, arguing, a hostile environment. Two things plays out in your child. Either they're very sheltered and they're quiet and they're to themselves, or they bring that rowdiness to school or to the forefront. So there are two parts that plays in this. But when your children are speaking to you directly and they hurt your feelings, step out of your feelings. Take them off. Put them on the shelf. Save them for a rainy day. But really take that moment to learn, what is my child teaching? Your children are your most precious teachers. And like you said, David has taught you how to channel your anger a little bit. Gage has taught me to mean what you say, and the things that you say, you mean them.
Mm-hmm.
And he is awesome. What'd you say?
I was agreeing with you. You know, one of the cool things and great things, I look at it as a great thing, you have learned to look at it as a great thing, is these children don't have the ability to lie.
They don't.
They have to learn sometimes on the way they word things so it doesn't come out so blunt in your face and have a little tact to it, which comes later on in life, but they don't have that ability to lie. So when they screw up, they're the first ones to say, I screwed up, or this happened. They're also the first ones to call you out.
Hey. Yeah. Gage goes, it's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah. You know, and I love the age-old line of do as I say, not as I do. Most kids just accept this willingly because you're an adult in that, you know, there's the pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
In their world, that doesn't exist. They don't understand that concept.
How does that operate? Yeah, what does that look like in that operation?
So, like, when you say...
I don't have a...
Like, for instance, okay. Mom swears like a sailor.
Auntie, too.
You know. I'm German, Irish, and military. I have a temper. And the way I use my temper is I run my mouth. But I also spit out a lot of choice words. My kids develop those words. And so they call me out on it. They're getting better about leaving me alone because they know that I get frustrated and you have two options. Either I can swear and when I drop something and break something, or I yell, which way do you want it to go? So my kids have gone old school now. They've figured out unique ways to say those words without saying those words. So if you say ocean really fast, it comes out, oh shit. If you hold your tongue and say apple, it sounds like asshole. Mom, I said apple, it's not swearing. You just heard me wrong. Mom, I said ocean. You just heard it wrong.
So they put the blame back on you because you heard it.
Correct. We said these words. We said the right words. You heard it wrong is the wrong words. If there's a loophole in the system, they will find it. If there's a way to go around it, they will find it.
As long as Gage can go on a trip. Nothing matter. You know, speaking of trips, I want to give you this little bit of information. Recently, you just traveled with Gage. I know we talked about it before. But I want to give, like, a big kudos. I was trying to wait for the sneeze, and as soon as I talked, there it went. Bless me. Major kudos to, like, TSA and them understanding people have differences in things and the respond time and the way that they are in the airports that I have experienced thus far. Wow, my special guest just got here today, guys. We'll be chiming in with Coach Adrian of Swim Life Fitness. She's on the radio show, and I wanted to bring her in on here today as well. But just the accommodation. So I want to give you this, guys, this little hack that I found out recently traveling with Gage. When booking your flight, a lot of times it's so quick to book on our smartphone and just go on, you know, and purchase our tickets. But they don't give you all the options on your app. So when booking a ticket and you're flying neurodivergent, go to your desktop and actually book the ticket, right? There are so many accommodations that you can plug in, and they have special codes for them. So the airline picks it up, TSA notices on your ticket, flight attendant, so on and so forth. And I'm like I said, I'm new to this because I always just book flights on my phone and just the app away, do it. But I never took time to get online on a desktop on your laptop and book it on the full version of the website, because you can even write out different things that you may need, and they will do their best to accommodate them. Whether it's a weighted blanket, whether it's earplugs, whether it's headphones, a plush toy, there you can actually put these things on there, and it makes traveling so much easier. But I know that Mary has been working on this beautiful kit to get moms ready, so this is going to be a beautiful thing. Thank you so much, sister, for being so considerate of, you know, mommies all around the world to have, like, a kit. You know, I was even thinking, because, you know, my mind goes, and I go, I'm extremist. So I was like, ooh, this will be great during doomsday, you know, end of the world, and the shit's about to happen. But I got my sensory kit, you know, like whatever that is to get you through to the other side. But after you book your flight and you put the accommodations and things, they make it a real live experience from the airport. You can check in at the curb. You can do curbside check-in. You can check in at baggage claim. You can do other things. And once you get on, and this was booked with Southwest. I have not tried these accommodations with anybody other than Southwest at the moment. So I was like, let me tell you who this was. But from even from the ticketing gate to they say, hey, you may be in group A or group B, but when they board elderly or military or whatever, when they board, you go to the counter. Here you go. When you get to the plane, they try to make sure you maybe you need to be near a bathroom. Maybe your preference is up front. Even though Southwest, you cannot, you just pick a seat. Like, pick a seat. You're going to fly, but pick a seat. No assigned seat. But if you have certain situations and they say, well, you know, you need to be up front, that's why you can get on the plane first so you can get the front seat. So I thought that was very cool. Hartsville Jackson, I think, is actually creating a sensory room in the airport, so that's exciting. That's super, super exciting. So, yeah, that was my take on traveling. The hotel was great. Shout out to the Sheraton by Marriott. They are wonderful. We traveled for Gage's birthday, and everybody from the bartender to the pool attendant and everybody at the front desk was just super amazing at the Renaissance in Fort Lauderdale. It was beautiful. He had an amazing time, and there was actually an arcade, but kind of sensory place to go play at near walking distance. When I say walking distance, I mean like a 3-minute walk. So we enjoy all the perks of that. So shout out to the people who go above and beyond to make sure people with superpowers have their normalcy. I just wanted to put that out there.
You know, we're going to tomorrow, Courage Rising, my organization, and Surge 365, a travel agency that trains travel agents and discount travel and stuff. They have their own show on Tuesdays. We are going to be talking about, we are launching a consulting and training department in our organization for travel agents, including checklists for agents to be able to ask these questions for neurodivergent families and what they need, how to make the rooms more friendly, different things. Like you said, having that sensory play area close to a hotel, you know, find those hotels that are close to it, from foods, you know, and a lot of people don't understand this because a lot of us, you know, we'll eat pizza. Great, but these kids have different sensory needs, or they get stuck into this mold when it comes to food where they will only, for example, only eat Jack's Pizza. But they will only eat Jack's Pizza that has a certain label on it. So when they change that label, they won't eat it for a while because it's different. To them, it's different, even though the inside is the same, the packaging's different. Now, making sure the foods that they eat are available where they're going, or do they need to pack a cooler and bring some stuff with? Now, making sure where they can get them, making sure that the packaging is the same so these kids have that stuff that they need to have that comfortable trip. To visual schedules and visual charts for the nonverbals and for the kids to understand the process and what's going on from the time you get to that airport to how you check in at an airport to checking into a hotel, what your hotel looks like. Well, all these services will be available.
Do you feel that, I want to kind of go back to the school, do you feel that they don't have enough, like, people who are, like, trained or prepared? Like, what is the deficit that is in school, the reason why you think they place all of the superpowered children together, no matter the level, they put them all together?
One of the things is some schools, they don't have enough trained individuals. Two, a lot of these, it's easier to put them all in one room and confine them to one space so they don't, quote unquote, disturb the regular children, because these kids tend to have sudden outbursts or different issues that will be distracting. And I always look at it as, you know, they have little tics. If it's, you know, shaking their hands or making a comment or doing something, how is that different than a deaf child with a sign interpreter right there?
It is no different. It absolutely. Listen, when Gage was, he was in KIPP, he had a person like that with him. And that Mr. Campbell, I speak highly of this man to this day. He was so amazing and so awesome. He was just too great for this world. And Mr. Campbell passed away. And that was kind of like a little bit of a break in Gage's learning, because he did not have, you know, the aid anymore. And they didn't replace him. They tried to replace him with someone else, but just as it wasn't the same or other things. So we wound up changing schools, and we're at school again. I think currently we're going to look into a homeschool pod or a learning pod or something like that. But it's homeschool, but it's a place where, like, mommies like me who can't really do homeschool, but homeschool.
Right. I'd look at connections, because you can do school when you can do it. It's a lot of it was designed for kids in sports that spend half their days training. So it's very open of when you do schoolwork. You just have to do so many hours a day. That's it. When you do it, it's up to you. You know, your live lessons are available on video after the class. So, you know, if you can't make a live lesson, you can go back and watch it. The other issue is, and this is what I found to be the biggest issue with schools, and this is what we're going to talk about too, is good therapy versus bad therapy, is that these teachers they come up with this persona of, all right, I have a doctor's degree. I have a master's degree. I specialize in this. And they have no personal experience with these type of children. And so these books, these educations, they tell you this is how you're supposed to do things. And they get so rigid in their teaching. They have such an agenda. This is what they need. They want to teach that day, that they get so into this mindset that our kids have to be normal. They have to do this. They have to do this. They have to do this. This is how you have to do it. And they end up into this point that you are two bulls butting heads, because you're forgetting that these are kids, for one. But two, you are not looking at them like kids. You're looking at them like little machines or little puppies. And two, if you look at a lot of these rooms designed for special needs kids, especially autism kids, we live in this theory, and it's been proven wrong and outdated. You know, these rooms are usually very clinical. They're very therapy rooms. They're like basically a hospital room. You know, there's not a lot of things on the walls. It's very plain, very white, very blah. So when they do go into a regular classroom with all those distractions, don't know what to do, because they're not used to seeing that.
That is definitely a problem that needs to be assessed when we're doing our IEP meetings, because the opposition to put Gage in regular classes, because I also know that sometimes behaviors are learned. Like, they are learned. The more you are around something, you become it. So behaviors are learned. But at the same time, if you put them in to situations where, like you said, maybe the profound kids are with, like, the kids who maybe clap, slap, and rock. Now they're coming home with different noises, sounds, movements. Because, case in point, this happened to my first round of school. Gage is in first grade. And, you know, they put him with the kids that are profound. And I'm like, okay, he came home hitting his head on the wall. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We've never done this behavior. He also used to hit himself. Whoa, again, so I had to unlearn that him because this is what he was watching. So mm-hmm. He was picking up what they was putting down.
That's it.
And so behavior is, like I said, doing the IEP part, when some people, you know, we talk about ABA therapy and what that looks like and how to kind of break traditionally on what we thought it was and how to actually use it and apply it, or just being out in public, wearing clothes, like, okay, different behaviors like whining and sleeping in your own bed. You know, I think that is where these type of therapies or practices could be implemented, you know. But again, whatever you do at home, you gotta do it at school. Whenever you do it at school, you gotta do it at home. So everybody has to be on like this one accord on how to make this work.
Exactly. But that's where we have the biggest problem with these therapies, is that what's done in school is done in school. We don't teach the parents. So you have no conditional follow-through. You know, schools, and I had this problem with my kids at school. They don't want to talk to parents. They don't want to work with parents. They look at parents as dumb things that they know better because they have the education. I'm suing my kids at school for this reason. Because my daughter has sensory issues. She gets overwhelmed. It's in her IEP. If she needs a break, she's allowed to say, I need a break. And she's allowed to tuck off and take a break. And she gets overwhelmed and she cries. They have driven her special ed teacher has driven her to the point now where her anxiety is so inflamed that she scratches, she itches. And she is to the point now where she refuses to talk in class because she's afraid she's going to say the wrong thing and get corrected and yelled at. And it's, our doctor's really irritated about it. She's actually going to testify in court with us about it.
Because anxiety.
Sensory needs are an actual disability. It is not something that they create on their own. It's something that is actually in their minds and their body and how it manifests. It's a mind-body connection. It's a real legitimate issue. And this is where, you know, ABA therapy, and I was always, I'm against it, but I'm against old ABA therapy. I am for progressive ABA therapy. And all ABA therapy is behavior modification for the positive. What I do every day is a form of progressive ABA therapy. You know, and this is where, you know, a lot of the old ABA therapy focuses on the irrelevant. It focuses on things that are not important. It focuses on teaching them to basically obey commands and respond accordingly. You sit down, you learn this is a red ball. They say a red ball. How is that useful in everyday life? They can name a ball. You know, this is the thing.
They can identify a ball and a color.
Right. The problem is that they are being basically trained to respond to a cue, a card or something. So when you are in the real world, you can see a card of a sink, and you're standing in front of a sink, they can't say sink. They don't know what that is. They can't put two and two together because they're not taught how to put two and two together. They're taught to respond to commands, not taught to critical think. This is where your therapy is irrelevant. It is bad therapy. You know, does your therapy rely heavily on reinforcement, especially food reinforcement? Which means your child behaves, they get a treat. They do it wrong, they don't get a treat. There's a place where reinforcements are good. There's a place where they're not needed. And you need, you know, it's like giving your child a reward for doing their chores. You know, you get an allowance. You know, it's not where every time they do it right, they get a treat.
Yeah, because then they'll be expecting.
Correct. And they will only work for that treat.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But.
Go ahead.
In the case of gays, trips work. Trips work for a better attitude.
Well, when you take trips, you do, that's your reward. But it's
mm-hmm.
also bonding, but it's also therapy. Because you're taking him out of his normal element of what he's being, what he's doing, where he's at, and putting him in somewhere new and different. So it teaches him how to adapt. So, you know, trips like that are a positive win in more than one way. You know, it's not just him getting a reward for doing what he's supposed to be doing or behaving above and beyond, but it's also teaching him to the adaptive skills of being able to do things in different environments. You know, it's like taking the kids to Buffalo last year out of the blue. You know, there's so many different elements to a positive in those situations. And that brings me to another point about therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is bad therapy when only therapy is happening in the what we call a therapy room. And this is where they become so complacent to the point where they don't understand the real world. They spend 40 hours, 20 hours, 10 hours in a room looking at flashcards and objects and not being able to take that, what they learn in that world, and put it into real life. Which is why so many of these kids cannot function in the real world because they're not taught how to function in the real world. They're bussed from therapy to therapy to school to home, and that's it. And they're just being left to their devices in each place and not taught how to interact, do things. You know, and this is one thing I'm going to reiterate a lot of. The staff, especially in schools, are not trained properly. You may have every degree and certification out there to man, but that doesn't mean you're qualified. You may be book qualified. But the only way that you can be qualified to work with these children is actually working with these kids in alternative settings. Dealing with these kids on a regular basis outside the world of a classroom. You know, I believe these teachers should be put into PCA workers and home care facilities, you know, dealing with these kids in the real world before they deal with them in the classroom. So that they understand how these kids work, how they think. Because when you're in a classroom, you're taught to behave a certain way. And you don't get to understand that in a real world difference. You know, especially when, you know, in a classroom, especially when you have the certificates and the degrees and you are all this, and you've not had this experience personally with a child of this caliber, becomes the Napoleon syndrome. And by that, I mean you stand and tower over them and you expect them to behave because you barked an order. You expect them to do what you want them to do because you said so, because you are the one in charge.
And I think if parents cut out the power trip in it, because I know we are here to be adults and authoritative figure in certain instances, but again, Trav, like you hit it on the head when you was like, this therapy was outside of a normal therapy room. And then he was like, because we were traveling, that the things that we did through bonding was therapy. Y'all, this kid, listen, he kept telling me, Mom, I really appreciate this. I'm having a good time. And then when we got back home, he DM'd me a message on Instagram, and it was somebody singing like a little cute jingle on how awesome their mom is and they love their mom. Y'all, I was teary-eyed, okay? Y'all know I'm a thug and thugs don't cry, but baby, I had to shed a thug tear because his emotions, like, and as I think that he's emotionless often, he expressed himself that I am grateful that I went on this trip and I had a good time and thank you and I love you. Like, he said those things, y'all. So those types of therapies, like taking a moment to unplug from your phone, travel, sit with your kid and understand how they roll, and sometimes just let your children call the shot. Like,
yeah.
Let your children call the shot.
You know, I love how you brought that point of just sitting and listening. You know, so many of these therapies are so rigid and so restrictive in your thoughts. You know, one thing I love about speech teachers, and I always find this so ironic, because they're supposed to teach you how to talk, okay? The one thing they have a very hard time doing is listening. Awkward silence is very hard for these individuals, all teachers. They can't shut up and listen. And these kids have figured it out early, that if you shut up and you stare at them, they will talk for you. They will answer the questions for you. So why do I need to talk? It's like having 10 kids and the baby doesn't talk till they're 6, because they don't need to. There's so many other brothers and sisters talking for you. Why do I need to say a word? And this is where, you know, bad therapy is. It becomes too rigid, too complacent, too, this is how it's going to be. You don't talk, I'm going to talk for you. And, you know, sitting there and correcting what they're saying and not letting them just talk, you know, narrating everything you're doing. You know, my son's gotten to the point, he'll just cover your mouth. He's like, no, just shut up. They like silence. Silence is good. They will talk if you just shut up. Like, my son has now gotten to the point where he wants us around, and all he wants us to do is just sit there with him. And I'll do that for a while, but there's just days I just can't sit. I got too many things I need to do. So I'll start talking so he kicks me out of the room. Because I need to get dishes done, I need to get dinner done, and he just wants you to sit with him. Or it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I really just need a little bit of sleep. And, you know, too, a lot of these kids have issues sleeping. Well, you know, part of that issue is they sit all day in rooms getting therapy. They're sitting all day. They're not being able to run around and play or just do something physical. So how do you expect them to sleep? You know, regular kids go to recess, they go to lunch, they go to Fayette. These kids don't do that.
They don't. Most of the time, mommy's packed their lunch.
Yeah.
Because they finicky eaters anyway, and they got to make sure that they ate today. So.
Yeah. You know, one of the good signs of therapy is it takes science but combines it with art. You know, you are able to think on your feet. If it's from teaching them to cook, to doing dishes, to cleaning, to, you know, anything. You know, you're using art, dance, meditation, yoga, karate, whatever it is, to help them learn their outlet.
And I've learned that Gage taking pictures of art is his outlet. It's his artlet. He enjoys all the things of art. Yay, round two. I said, yay, round two.
When you realize that I'm out here.
Hold on.
You know, another
on radio.
Good sign of therapy is the fact that it can be used anywhere. You know, what I teach is used in schools, is used at home, is practiced out in this, it's used in real life. It's not, you know, a lot of our traditional therapies are only done and only can be done in a therapy room. That's bad therapy because you can't take what you're learning from there and put it in real life. Everything that you learn should be able to be modified to be used in real life. You should be able to take a picture of a sink and see a sink and say sink and know it's a sink, that dishes go in the sink. You know, they should be able to look at a pair of shoes and know they get put away when they're done. The coat gets hung up. And not just look at a coat and say coat. You know, we are, as parents, are so brainwashed into thinking that, yes, they're disabled now. They're done. We put them on disability. We don't, when we settle for it, they get to communicate to a bare minimum. When don't our kids deserve so much more? Don't they deserve to be able to be challenged like regular kids? Don't they deserve to be able to be treated like a regular kid? Because their brains are wired a different way and they think a different way. Why does it they get passed down as to being mediocre? You know, there was an article in one of my that I get feed on because I study and I, you know, follow all the latest trends and all the new research coming out. 27-year-old girl from the Austria-Switzerland-Germany border. She is autistic, diagnosed with a borderline personality disorder and has depression. She's been seeing a therapist. That area is a right-to-die area. And so her therapist, and I truly believe this therapist should be just lose her license over this, but because her therapist told her that she cannot ever get any better, that she, her therapist doesn't know how to help her, instead of referring her to somewhere else, looking at different alternatives, this young, healthy girl, because she is autistic and struggles with depression, has petitioned the courts and won to where she can have assisted suicide done. Because her therapist gave up on her.
And that's another thing. When you're doing this work, like, the paycheck part is playing a big role in teachers this time go out. A lot of them are not passionate teachers like they used to be. They don't have the capacity to care. They have their own life going on, and these, you know, it just be a lot. It's not good. Oh, hold on, we got an expert. They got 2 cents. Come on, we got an expert.
The teachers aren't supported the way that they need to be supported, and when you have special situations in your classroom, then you add that onto the pressure of them telling you everyone has to pass this test at the end of the year. When you have that special situation, it kind of has to go on the back burner because you got to make sure if you got 28 kids in your class and you have 2 that have special situations, you got to concern yourself with those other 26. And the other 2 are usually supported by the IEDA the IDEA law, you know, with having 504s or IEPs. So they have a basically a security blanket when those other 26 don't. So that's what you got to focus on, and that's where it seems like teachers aren't having compassion, but it's not that. They're pressure from administration and higher up.
Okay, Mary, that's coming
from... Oh, yeah, I completely agree. It's a lot has to do with the administration system. And all these are a bunch of people who don't actually sit in classrooms and make these rules that can't be adjusted to work with IEPs. And a lot has to do with, too, with funding. You know, our schools are very underfunded compared to regular schools across the world. And especially now with the influx of immigrants coming in, and where I live in Minnesota now, what they have done is taken these kids who don't speak English and put them on IEPs. And they use that funding for the IEPs to hire translators to teach them English. Instead of it going into actual special needs children that need that help with learning.
And that was just some wise words from an educator. How long have you been in the education system? You taught for 10 years, been in the administration. Taught for 10, been in the school system for 15. Oh, your specialty. She was with the superpower kids. And again, I just wanted to let anybody know.
How did
know
you last that long in the administration world dealing with special needs kids? Because you sound like you have the passion to do it, and you, you know, you probably hit every brick wall there is.
I did. I just quit in 2021, especially when we started to see the gap in 2020. I quit in 2021 and started a nonprofit. So the nonprofit is for families and children who would have special needs or have those diagnoses. And from that angle, I'm able to help them provide wraparound food, swimming and behavior therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and to kind of help those families and assist with getting the resources that they need so they can know what to do and how to, you know, the tools they need to go into the classroom and come back, you know, what's happening, including the administration, because sometimes the help is needed. When you're talking about a teacher, the parents have to help too. And so
when
parents come in and they're equipped, and that helps the teacher, because a lot of times being a parent that's equipped is a great advocate for the teacher. And you don't really think about it from that point because you think the teacher is supposed to be doing all X, Y, and Z. But there's just certain things the teacher cannot say. If a teacher says or does a recommendation, like even from that, if I'm a teacher and I have a recommendation for somebody, I have to go through steps. I can't just go to the parent and say, hey, I think little Gage would need a little assistance or need a little help. There's a process, and if I were to go that route, there are legal ramifications that can happen. So for me, I found the public school system to be a little bit too slow when it came down to responding to our babies properly. And for me, I like to be able to come back on my end by helping out the parents.
No, I completely agree. And that's why I created my organization, was to help teach families, especially parents, about the IEPs is one of the big things, and how really we have a lot more power than we realize to get the help
right.
we need for our kids. And your guys'
right.
hands are really tied on what you can say to us. And to your some parents, you're kind of scared to say things because parents tend to react in this, oh, there's nothing wrong with my kid, he's fine. Or
right,
it's your
yeah.
fault because you didn't teach him properly. When with these kids with superpowers, they need that consistency of what happens at school, at home. And that's the biggest gap in our therapy systems, is they don't teach the parents how to work with their kids at home and stay consistent with the school. But two, a lot of parents are looking at these kids like they're a hassle and a burden, And so they just ship them off because a lot of our therapies are designed to just ship them off to daycares all day from one class to another. They come home long enough to sleep. So we as parents don't have to deal with them.
Right.
And we need to change
that,
the mindset in parents.
Right. And that's that lack of parents not knowing. Like parents, like through my swim program, I introduced a lot of parents to a lot of therapies. And a lot of parents did not know the benefit of like behavior therapy. A lot of parents didn't know the benefits of physical therapy, and that though you have therapy organizations that will come into the home that will help, you know, and parents just don't know. And I think if parents knew that there would be a therapist that would come into their home, they would open their doors for that. It's just that that's the lack of knowledge. And when parents do find out, like, oh, they can come to my house, oh, goodness, you know, it's they're excited and they want that. Because a lot of therapy stuff is eaten at home, like, you know, how to get them dressed in the morning, food programs. Some parents say all they eat is chicken and fries. Okay, we got to be able to get them some vegetables or some fruit in their system. That's a home program. Being able to clean up your room, that's a home program. So just those different, you know, we have to be able to start educating our families from that diagnosis time. And sometimes that doesn't always happen in the school. That happens in private doctors. So there's something, there needs to be, I think, some type of protocol or wraparound services that once your kid gets a diagnosis, then all these other things fall in place, kind of like early intervention. But if they're out of early intervention year, you know, then what's the plan? Early intervention kind of has a plan. So when you fall out of that, what do you do? And I think that's what I try to talk about, what's best practices after a diagnosis. What do you do? And then people change. You know, kids grow up. So as they're growing up, so does their biological clock. So does a lot of other things start happening. So parents have to be aware and prepared. What happens from 6 to 10? What happens at 10? Now 10 years old, now you're going into middle school. What happens at middle school? That brings on different behaviors. That brings on different anxieties or different sensory rate or whatever, right? And now, okay, now we got to tackle that. Now we got to tackle going into high school. Okay, now we got to tackle what life looks like as a civilian outside of high school and trying to acclimate into the world if you are not a high-functioning, you know, or if you are high-functioning and you have these things that you do, these quirks that you have to deal with. So it's just a lot of, like, just kind of educating and letting people know what's out there. People just don't know.
No, I'd love to get you on an episode of this show on Mondays at this time to talk about your organization and talk about what you're doing. Georgette, give her my information. I'd love to talk to you afterwards about what I'm doing and what I am connected with a whole bunch of different organizations to help you spread what you're doing too.
Okay, thank you.
Wonderful. This has been a great show, Mary. Thank you for coming on, telling me to come on. Thank you.
I was going to say it's my show.
Yeah, this is your show, my bad. Done took over to my bad, girl. I was not trying to.
You're good.
Gave me opportunity, so thank you.
You know, and give her my information. And, I'd love to get her on Hometown Heroes to highlight what she's doing. And, you know,
for
we
sure.
are connected with so many different organizations. Being Autistic Awareness Month, I've been doing nothing but talking to different organizations about this. And, you know, one of the big things is we need to change the school systems and we need to change administration. And talking to your local representatives, and I'm not saying talk to any local representative, talk to your local representatives that are on the education committee. And that's all public information, because if they're not on the education committee, you're talking to a brick wall because they have no power to do anything.
That's a word.
That's the biggest misconception is talk to a representative. Great, yeah, you need to talk to your local that is on that particular committee. Because any good representative will tell you flat out, I will get you the person that you can talk to. I cannot help you because I am not on that committee. So thank you for joining us Mondays and with our a special show today on autism awareness, the start of Autism Awareness Month. And throughout the shows, throughout the month, we will be talking about different aspects of neurodiversity and autism and how spreading awareness and understanding. And please, before we leave for the day, please, when you see a kid in the grocery store with a family that's having a breakdown, instead of making smart comments about your child being a spoiled, rotten brat, stop and ask that mom if there's something you can do to help. From holding their purse to helping them carry the groceries out as they're dealing with a struggling kid. Because you may not know, that child may be a spoiled, rotten brat having a temper tantrum, or it could be just, you know, they're special and have a sensory overload. It might have been too much noise, too many people, the lights might have been funky. You know, you never know what caused that issue unless you ask. And every mom with special needs, 90% of the time, you ask them, they're going to stare at you like, huh, when you first ask if they can help you, because most people never, ever ask for help or offer to help somebody. But two, we'll tell you, you know, he's special. And we're grateful
that people needed to hear that.
Because you got to remember, these kids have eyes, ears, and a mouth. They may not talk, but they understand everything that's said to you and said about them. And this all affects them. And remember, you're trashing a child, not an adult. Would you trash a normal child? No. Why is it okay for you to say something mean about a kid just because they're different? You know, we're in this Me Too culture of acceptance for everybody, but we're really not. We're in this who can speak the loudest, who can throw the biggest fit and be louder. But when it comes to our children, we are not accepting. And this is where we need to accept first, is where our kids are and who our kids are. And accept them for how they are and how we can make them better, not make them different. Take their gifts and teach them to that ability, not change them. Because there's nothing wrong with them. They're just wired a little differently.
Mary, when you were talking about corrupt, we went in our whole little tangent, like they're teaching gender roles in elementary school. And do you feel like a boy today or a girl today? What? No. You were born a boy. You're a boy. You were born a girl.
That's the sad part, is these kids are targeted. This is all one big giant. And I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but the thing is,
it's a general population control.
It is, and these kids are being targeted as a social experiment because they don't understand what this means. They have so many other things going on in their minds, it's irrelevant if they're a boy or a girl. They don't care.
Exactly.
All they care about is they pee sitting up or standing down. Hopefully they make it in the toilet today.
Yes. Okay.
But, you know, that's all part of this whole thing of how trying to change them. And my big thing on that is, you know, so many people, we're not teaching gender roles. We're not teaching what a boy is, what a girl is, what a mom is, what a dad is. And so how do they know if they're a boy or they're a girl if they're not even taught what a basic girl is or a boy is?
That part.
You know, we had Dick and Jane my grandparents had Dick and Jane. I had Dick and Jane because my grandparents taught me to read. Well, you know, we were taught, you know, little girls play house. We hold and care for babies. And then we had Barbie. And Barbie, you know, could be everything, but still Barbie was a mom. Dads, you know, did construction. Dads did this, this, and this. If you want to do construction, great. But you were still baseline a girl.
That's it.
No, the only profession, the only world I have really ever lived in or seen where it didn't matter if you were a boy or girl was in the military. You are not a boy, you are not a girl, you are a soldier. But you still adhere to certain rules, such as men had clean cuts, girls had hair off the collar and couldn't be fat hairstyles. You couldn't shave your head. But for the most part, you know, you were equal. Just saying. Let's let our kids be kids and stop this crap. And that's like teaching sex ed in elementary school, in third grade. But that's a whole other issue that we don't have time to get into today. Because I'm still writing nasty emails to the school about my daughter's schoolwork. So join us tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. Have a good day. Have a good night. Thank you for joining us. And remember, be kind. Ask if you can help somebody and accept our kids for who they are and help them grow to be the best they can be, not the best kid that's next door.
Thank you so much, Mary, for allocating the time for me and my tribe to thrive. I appreciate you.
Everybody's always welcome, and I appreciate you because, you know, you help give insight.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Until you know what you're doing, it's amazing. Have a good one.
You too, and give her my info.
I did already.
Awesome.
Thank you.
So see you back here tomorrow. Bye for now.
See y'all on Thursday, 10 a.m.